The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. So the Champions League final this year will be Manchester City versus Chelsea. Stand by for some excellent "Is this proof that the Premier League is the greatest league in the world?" chat. Thomas Tuchel's men see off a disappointing Real Madrid with relative ease. Kante ubiquitous, Havertz floating, Werner scoring a goal. Sid's here for the fallout in Spain. Eden Hazard caught smiling afterwards, the biggest crime in football. Elsewhere, there's some Europa Leagues and Premier League and an utterly terrifying final weekend in the EFL. Plus Chelsea women edging closer to the WSL title. There's an Australian owner sneaking his way in to watch his own team, and Barry's mailbag keeps on giving with the recurring themes of dating advice and car crashes. All that plus your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Lars Sivertsen. Hello.
Hi, Max.
Jonathan Faduba. Hello, mate.
Hi, Max.
And hello, Barry Glendenning.
Hello, Max.
And also
big grass.
that doesn't mean anything to anyone, Barry.
Not yet.
Well, maybe you could put it in context.
I'm not going to put it in
context. The shocking revelation we heard just before we started recording this pod, that you're a dirty rat.
I'll reveal it.
I'm not sure I could even do this. I'm going to have to seriously reconsider our working relationship in light of the revelation that you once ratted out a homeless person for shoplifting.
Well, we don't know. I don't know if it's a homeless person. I don't know that for sure. And they'd stolen 12 Magnums, and I thought that was too much ice cream for anyone. A sandwich, turned a blind eye. I am someone who works at a homeless shelter every week, Barry. I don't like to talk about it.
Yeah, what, as a police informant?
Also on the panel, Sid Lowe. Hello, mate.
Hi, Max.
Chelsea 2, Real Madrid 0. Apart from a couple of decent saves from Mendy early on, this was so straightforward. How come, Lars?
Because Chelsea are very good and Real Madrid were not that good. We have Sid here. Sid, you've been talking a lot this season about how with Barcelona, at least, there's a sense that, okay, they're getting better, but Europe is kind of a step beyond them yet. And I wonder if there's the same level of self-reflection with Real Madrid. Because when you look at their performances over two legs against Chelsea, they just weren't that good. I mean, there are still players here who, on their day, can do tremendous things. We saw that finish from Benzema in the first leg, and we saw Toni Kroos's passes against Liverpool, and you know, Luka Modric has had a good couple of good performances this season, of course, but on their day they can do incredible things. But you're also keenly aware that their best days were at least 5 years ago, in some of their cases maybe 10. And Chelsea were just in complete control. I never felt any kind of jeopardy in this game. I mean, maybe that's because I'm not a Chelsea fan. I didn't have any skin in the game. But I was just 100% convinced Chelsea would go through from the first whistle. And at no point did you feel otherwise. And that's maybe not great for Real Madrid, given the stature of their club and the fact that it was a Champions League semi-final that they were still on paper very much in.
Well, I mean, you talk about the sense of jeopardy. I must admit, watching the game, I think logic says you feel no sense of jeopardy at all, because this was Chelsea being vastly superior for a second game in a row. The only jeopardy, I suppose, comes through experience and through having seen Real Madrid get away with this so many times. And I must admit that when we got into the 80th minute and Chelsea still hadn't scored the second goal, at that point you think, oh, here we go, jammy 90th minute, we equaliser coming up. But apart from that, you know, in terms of the kind of the cold analysis of it, that's entirely right. And this has been the reality of Madrid for most of the season. A lot of this season, you've watched them and thought, they're not very good. And yet somehow they're sort of still there. And that's kind of I must admit, as it went into those last 10 minutes, that's how I thought it might end. I thought, here we go, we're going to get this again.
Havertz and Werner were great, I thought, yesterday. Barney writing in the paper today, there's something classically comical about the Werner Havertz double act, a scattergun, inside out forward, and his gangling, fine-featured friend, a 20-year-old marvel of skill and technique with the diffident air of a minor Jane Austen character. I presume, Jonathan, you knew about Havertz and Werner probably about a decade ago. But it's interesting how it's sort of classically written off by large areas of sort of football fandom and the press when they've just arrived. And Havertz especially is just a joy of a footballer, isn't he?
Yeah, I think it's a good sort of, it's testament to how you kind of need to give players time to develop and grow. I think, for example, Kai Havertz, you know, there was a lot of mitigating circumstances to why he made such a slow start. Obviously, I think he got COVID for quite a long time and was ill for quite a while. Then obviously you have to bear in mind as well that these players are human beings in a pandemic. They've moved from Germany in this case, and I think in the case of Havertz, for example, he had no family around him. He's not allowed to go out to get a sandwich, for example, or go to, you know, get a drink or something like that. So it's kind of, you know, you're just on your own. You've got no family. So it's a very difficult, challenging circumstance for, I think, new players moving to a new country and having to adapt, you know, as you would normally in any kind of normal season to a new environment. So I think that has to be kept in mind. I mean, from my point of view, I think Havertz is outstanding. At Leverkusen, he was top. He can play in so many different positions. And I think what Thomas Tuchel's done quite well is he's found the right role for him and a lot of other players in his team as well. I mean, I thought what he did really well in this game was just the way that he kind of got runners in the spaces behind Real Madrid's midfield. Real Madrid don't have the most kind of, you know, the midfield is very, very good. And Casemiro, for example, against Liverpool was incredible. But Tuchel managed to get those Havertz and Mount as well running in behind the midfield and you know, into the spaces between the centre backs, and they really, really struggled to deal with that, to be honest. Ramos in particular really, really looked kind of like he didn't really know where to turn at certain points. And Werner as well, I think he's had a lot of criticism, so it was nice that he got the goal and nice that he kind of had his moment. I mean, in terms of potential wise, sorry, I think Havertz is probably in the long term probably going to be maybe slightly better, but you know, Werner has. He's tried hard, hasn't he, this season? And I kind of felt a bit sorry for him at points in the season. So it was nice for him to get his moment.
Yeah, I mean, I did think there was a tiny part of me going, can he miss this chance for this goal? Like, how would you do it? Like, how possibly could you miss this chance? But he took the goal well. And actually, he's been involved in 22 goals in all competitions this season, 12 goals, 10 assists, the most of any Chelsea player. Previous Chelsea player to both score and assist 10 or more goals in a season was Eden Hazard, and we'll get on to him in a bit. But I thought that goal was lovely. I loved the dink as well from Havertz, and, you know, right place, right time, Baz, for Timo Werner.
Yeah, I mean, as nightmarish maiden seasons at a new club go, his has been pretty decent. And if he does hit a rich vein of goal-scoring form next season, then crikey, he's going to get a lot of goals. They just ran the Real Madrid defence ragged and were obviously helped in no small part by N'Golo Kante being N'Golo Kante again, another man of the match performance. But I think, like City the night before, everyone on the Chelsea team contributed. No one had a bad game.
Mason Mount, the first Englishman to score at this stage for Chelsea since Frank Lampard in 2008. Charlie says, on the theme of things that Mason Mount can do, but so can Barry, could Baz have tucked away that square ball? I believe in you, Barry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, great. Sid, I didn't quite understand Real Madrid's tactics, and in the sense that they didn't seem to have much of an attacking threat, yet they were completely open at the back. It seems like if you have one or the other, kind of get it, right? You really press and then you're open at the back. But to do both seems sort of naive.
Yeah, the short blanket syndrome, isn't it? You can cover your feet or you can cover your head. Real Madrid managed to uncover both of them. and then to add to that, I mean, if we're going to look at a football team in terms of three lines, they also had no midfield. And it seemed like Chelsea were able to just run through the middle of that as well. I think that in terms of looking at the tactics, in terms of the way they structured it last night, obviously the big focal point has been the decision to play Vinicius as a right wing back, which just didn't work at all. Obviously, there are question marks as well about returning Sergio Ramos, who hadn't played for 50 days and whether he was fully fit. Mendy didn't look at all fit on the other side. And I think the fitness part of it is significant. You know, this is a team that Zidane said when they won the Clásico a couple of weeks ago, we're at the very limit physically. They've had lots of injuries. They weren't right. But yeah, you're right. Tactically, it didn't feel right. And this feeds into what you were saying about Hazard, that part of this feels like it was done to find a place for him, to give him the freedom to play his game. And in a way, one of the things that Madrid had done well over the last two or three months was forget about Hazard. Because I think too often over this 2-year period where he's been desperately unlucky with injuries, There's been a sense of them kind of trying to keep a place open for him and putting him back in the team straight away and being too desperate for him to play. And over the last couple of months, they'd sort of forgotten that. And other players had started to take a step up. And then he comes back this time and goes straight back in the team. And of course, didn't contribute really anything very much.
He didn't, and he smiled afterwards.
Yeah, what a heinous crime that is. Is it heinous or is it heinous?
It's both for is that it, sort of crime.
Right, okay. That will be the focal point of this, and there will be a lot of talk about that, there's no doubt about it. But I think that will obviously disguise much broader questions about the age of this Real Madrid squad, about some of the things that they've got wrong. As I say, for a lot of this season, they haven't been that good. And yet they are there. You know, they're in a Champions League semi-final, albeit one in which they were overrun in both games. They're in the with a chance of winning La Liga as well. In a way, it's the surprise, I suppose, is that they're still standing.
Now, Jonathan, you found unearthed quite an amazing video of Spanish television. It basically, best to describe it, they've got doom music, haven't they? For and a picture of Hazard smiling and a very disappointed presenter.
Yeah, I think the show's called El Chiringuito, I believe, and it's Spanish. Yeah. From what I understand, anyway, it's kind of like tabloid kind of sports publication or something like that. I know that they did an interview with Perez about the Super League as well a couple of weeks ago. That's why when I first sort of watched the show, to be honest, and yeah, I came across this yesterday and I couldn't stop laughing, to be honest. The dramatic music and like the picture of him smiling in the background, just making him out to be I was scared of him by the end of the video. You know, I thought like he was gonna, you know, commit some sort of crime somewhere, and like, it was just, yeah, it's the most bizarre thing I've seen. I think
there is a bit of me, and I really do apologize for sounding like a horrible party pooper here. First of all, there's a bit of me that finds it kind of comic how people are now discovering Chiringuito, which is this show. There's also a bit of me that's slightly horrified about the discovery of Chiringuito as if it was something great, because it is truly appalling in so many ways. But yes, it is kind of funny too.
We can play a clip, and Barry, I believe, has translated the thing. So look, here's what it sounds like with the doom music, the angry Spanish man.
Madrid, eliminado, y Hazard partiéndose la caja. Hazard.
Barry, if you could provide some sort of translation, it may not be of that exact clip, but you've done the work, so let's hear it.
Well, the man in question is José Pedrerol, who seems to be a kind of Spanish Sean Hannity.
That's exactly what it... Yeah, there's an element of TV evangelist about him. Angry TV evangelist. And bear in mind, one thing that's worth noting, and of course this was reflected in the fact that this was the TV channel that interviewed Florentino Perez, which is part of the reason, I think, why the Super League project fell apart. Because you present a big project like that, you should do it with all of the presidents and the owners together, showing a common front and strength and power. And instead, you put him on a late night, tacky as fuck TV show, and that's kind of what happens. But yeah, Josep Pedrerol is kind of TV evangelist. That's one way of putting him.
Yeah. So he begins, El Madrid eliminado.
I'm enjoying
I think
this.
Is self-explanatory. And then yeah, he basically goes on to say Madrid eliminated. And Hazard taking the piss. 2 years teasing Real Madrid. Overweight. Madrid wanted him for 3 years. They paid 100 million for him. You've just been knocked out. And something amuses you? After Zidane gave you an opportunity to play from the start that you did not deserve, you laugh at everyone. Hazard cannot continue another second at Real Madrid.
Thank you. Thank you, Barry. Wonderful performance, Barry. I enjoyed it tremendously.
Sid, can he continue at Real Madrid? I guess they're kind of stuck with him.
Well, that's the thing. If you actually take the decision to not have him continue at Real Madrid, how do you manage it? Who buys him? Where do you get the money from? Look at the situation with Gareth Bale. Gareth Bale, they had to put him out on loan to Spurs because they couldn't find an exit strategy for him, having, by the way, blocked his move out to China the summer before. There's one other thing I just want to throw in here, and this isn't an attack on Hazard, because I think Hazard's been desperately unlucky with injuries. I think there are some doubts about applications on, but the fundamental thing is he's been desperately unlucky with injuries. But I just want to kind of throw one thing in, which is I've seen a huge amount again today, but over the last kind of 18 months or so, about the concern that Hazard would become another Bale, that Hazard would be a disaster like Bale was, and kind of comparing the two as if Bale is the benchmark for failure at Real Madrid. Now, again, this isn't meant as an attack on Hazard, but it is meant on as a kind of let's have some perspective about Bale. Yeah, Eden Hazard has scored 4 goals for Real Madrid. Gareth Bale has scored 4 times in European Cup finals. So when it comes to comparing them, how about we put a little bit of respect on Gareth Bale's time at Real Madrid?
It's probably worth noting that if this happened, if someone, if Chelsea had lost and one of their players was laughing and joking with former teammates from the winning team at the final whistle, let's not delude ourselves into thinking that certain journalists in this country and lots of Chelsea fans wouldn't also be clutching their pearls.
Barry,
and
the perfect example of that is how many times we've seen accusations at players for swapping shirts, for example. You know, we get that, don't we? And particularly if it's swapping shirts at half-time, we've had that kind of mad, pearl-clutching moral outcry at players daring to have friends on other teams and stuff. So I think you're completely right. And it disguises the you know, broader questions. That said, I suppose when you're a footballer, there are certain things that you should know that even if it's purely out of cynicism and self-interest, probably a good idea to do this once you're out of sight of cameras.
Well, Hazard always strikes me as someone who doesn't really care what anyone thinks about him.
So. Yeah, well, but that's, of course, part of the whole sort of narrative and debate now is whether part of what's happened to Hazard and part of the reason why he hasn't performed is because he just sort of doesn't care enough. And of course, that comes back to bite you far too easily, I think.
But I was quite sad to discover the El Chiringuito video, funny as it was, because I was actually a little bit annoyed with him. But watching that clip, I realised that being annoyed with him is quite silly and I should just get over it and be cool enough to not. But I do actually think, you know, the transfer fee is not really his fault, so he shouldn't be hit over the head with that. But he's being paid an awful lot of money by Real Madrid. Injuries are not his fault, but he could probably have done more to stay in shape at least. And he scored, like you said, 4 more goals for Real Madrid than my dog, which is not as many as you would hope. And you've just gone out of the Champions League. You've been in, I'd go so far as to say humiliated. We played off the park, certainly, by Chelsea, who looked so much better in every aspect. It's okay that, fine, he doesn't care that he's been knocked out. He doesn't care that it's not going well for him, I guess. But maybe don't behave like that in front of the cameras. There's, show a modicum of respect for the fans who are upset. Show a modicum of respect for the club who are paying you an awful lot of money to do this. At least have enough respect to do it away from the cameras, I think. And you can cue the doom music if you want, but I'm going to die on this hill. Sorry. It is disrespectful behavior. It just is.
Would you prefer it if he put on a sackcloth tracksuit and rang a bell?
I'd quite like it.
You know,
that.
I mean, it's
fun,
not going to change the result.
I mean, it would be very funny.
Can we talk about Thomas Tuchel and what he's done at Chelsea? Because, Jonathan, it's if you think about the idea of Chelsea being in the Champions League final 6 months ago or you know, early in the season, I mean, everybody would have, I don't know if they'd have laughed at you because it's impolite, but they'd have been surprised if you'd suggested it. And it's not just, you know, improving Havertz and Werner. It's bringing players back in like Aspilicueta and Rudiger, who I basically thought were done at Chelsea.
No, he's been fantastic. And I think he's a really, really top manager. I think he's elite. And I think it'll probably prove in the end to be quite a shrewd decision from Chelsea to sort of obviously get rid of Frank Lampard and get Thomas Tuchel when he was available. I thought it was a mistake by PSG, to be honest, to get rid of him. Obviously, he got them to the Champions League final, so I think he's become the first manager to get to back-to-back Champions League finals with two different clubs. So that's obviously one he can put on his CV, potentially, because I know he's due with contract talks, isn't he, with Chelsea? I think it was a short-term contract that he signed, so you know, when they look to tie him down, he can certainly put that one on his CV. And also, I think he's the third manager at Chelsea to get into the Champions League final who's been sacked, who's joined sort of midway through a season after Avram Grant and Roberto Di Matteo. I think he's certainly, you could argue, probably top of that list in terms of just potential longevity at Chelsea. He's really, really good manager, I think. Tactically, every game pretty much since he joined, I can't think of too many games where he's been sort of outthought tactically, whether Premier League or Chelsea.
Apart from Big Sam.
Yeah, but that happens to everyone, I suppose, doesn't it, at some point. His understanding of the game and tactics and that kind of thing, and space, and his training methods are really kind of like, you know, first class, I think. So, yeah, he's done a really, really good job, and I think he's got a good chance to win the Champions League. If you look at where they were when he joined, I don't think many would have thought they would be where they are now, if that makes sense. So I think he's a really, really good manager.
Interesting, Lars, that Tuchel won the semi-final against Pep and tactically got it right. They play each other on Saturday. Manchester City can obviously win the league. You know, if you... Do you try and hide something if you're Thomas Tuchel in this game? I mean, you need to win to get in the top four, to be sure of the top four.
I mean, fundamentally, he's set his team up very similarly in most games, even though actually they didn't have that much possession in this one, which was kind of interesting because that's different from how it's gone. I don't think he's going to change too much for a final, but maybe things like set piece routines and stuff, like blocking runs for corners and stuff that you maybe have in mind for the final, you won't necessarily do in the league game. But I'd be surprised if he did anything radically different there. But bearing in mind, they really need the points in the league as well. I mean, if they could, you don't expect to get a lot out of City, I guess, but they're in a proper fight still for the Champions League spot. So the game matters.
Did you see that amazing clip of Andre Agassi? I think it was this week.
That was good.
Talking about Boris Becker, and that this fits really well with this. That idea that Agassi had noticed that Becker had a little tick, which is that he would lick his lips in a particular way if it was a certain type of serve, and he'd reached the point where he knew where Becker's serves were going, but he decided he had to act as if he didn't know unless it was a really, really big point. So it feeds really nice into this idea of, yeah, do you hide things? Do you not give away that you know something about the opposition because you can't, or you've got one great training ground routine, only use it if it's the 90th minute and you really need the goal. And it was just a fascinating kind of insight into the kind of that ultimate, really, really, really elite level of snippets of information that can be useful, but you cannot use it too often because you can't give the game away.
The other brilliant bit of that clip is Boris Becker, you know, when Agassi finally told Becker years later, you know, about it, and Boris Becker saying, "I always used to go home and say, he can read my mind, and I had no idea why." Jay Fitz says, "After seeing the random motivational words around the Chelsea dressing room, which undoubtedly got them over the line, what words do the Football Weekly staff have stenciled onto their walls?" Yeah, there's a picture of them celebrating in the dressing room, Chelsea, and the words are fast, power, hard work, intensity, put up in different blues and different sizes.
It's like a Batman fight, isn't it? Kapow, wham, zamo, biff.
N'Golo Kante really took this on board, huh?
Yeah, but I mean, presumably, like, there must be some science behind it, that there's a reason that someone's checked that these things are helpful. But just having something up and, you know, talking loud, you know.
They have similar buzzwords up in the walls of randomly stenciled around the walls of Guardian Towers.
Do they? What do they say?
Oh God, let's not get into
Lefty
this.
Lefty snowflake. Snowflake.
Woke.
Yeah.
Right, lads, anyway. We've got to go out there and be really woke today. 110 woke percent.
I definitely went through a phase of having like a post-it with a big smiley face on the wall where we sit doing the, because I, you know, we record pretty early, not early in the morning, but in the morning, and you know, I'm not a morning person, and I'm not saying today I'm feeling okay, but there have definitely been pods where I've felt a lot more tired that I've ended up sounding because people don't want
to. I should admit, Lars, I've got a post-it note on the wall next to me now, and it says, "Remember, don't call Max a rat."
Oh, damn it.
When do you do the smiley face? Do you do it just before the pod, or do you do it the night before?
No, I don't have to do the smiley face. I just have to remember to, like, don't sound like I'm upset that I've had to get out of bed earlier than usual.
Yeah, Max has a post-it note with the Crime Stoppers hotline.
Scott Carson, by the way, was with Liverpool in Istanbul in 2005, will be with Man City in Istanbul in 2021. And if Derby get relegated from the Championship, he'll be a reigning Champions League winner in League One if Man City win. Lots of ifs and caveats, but quite an interesting stat for someone in about 6 months' time. Chris says, it feel like it's been a while since we had a Richard Jolly statistic. Is he okay? Here we go then, Chris, just for you. In 2021, footballing Mendes will win the Premier League, the FA Cup, the League Cup, the Champions League and the Community Shield, the Mendy quintuple. And another one, Erling Braut Haaland is now almost certain to become the first Yorkshireman to top score in a Champions League European Cup season. We'll join one Lancastrian, Dennis Violet, and one man from Nottinghamshire, Mick Jones. And we'll finish this part with a nice email we had from Barry's mailbag. It says, Max & Co, Steve here, Man City fan living in Winnipeg in Canada. City fan since 1969, FA Cup final. 2 years ago, my Man United supporting dad came over to visit for Christmas and casually picked up a cut-price Chelsea shirt at the airport for my then five-year-old as a stocking filler, his words. Since then, my son has become an avid Chelsea fan, the only Chelsea fan in a town full of Winnipeg Jets ice hockey fans. After waiting all my life for a Champions League / European Cup final, I am now faced with having to reduce my son to tears when I bounce around the room or smile through gritted teeth if they pull it off. Gutted. Much love, all the best. Then he says something nice. We don't need to read out compliments, but he listens to us while jogging around the park in minus 30 degrees. Blimey. Steve Terrico Parrot. Thanks very much for that. Sid, very briefly, Hey Liga, title race is great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's slightly less great than it could have been because Sevilla were beaten on Monday. We were hoping it was going to be a proper four-team league. But it's very, very tight at the top. And this weekend, you've got Atletico Madrid against Barcelona and Real Madrid against Sevilla. So first against second and third against fourth. I think it's that way round. Or are Madrid ahead of Barca? No, Madrid ahead of Barcelona. And there's, you know, it's only in Atletico's hands, but they play Barcelona. If they were to lose to Barcelona, lots of people then say, well, then it's in Barcelona's hands, but actually it would go into Real Madrid's hands because Spain has that thing that England doesn't of using head-to-head goal difference. So there won't be a chase for goals. There's already, if you like, a defined position if teams finish level.
Thank you, Sid. And we'll chat to you on Tuesday on the Europod.
Let's hope so.
Cheers, mate.
Cheerio.
Sid Lowe there, out in Spain. We'll be back in just a second to look ahead to the Europa League games and the Premier League too. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Europa League tonight. Manchester United's fixture list is ridiculous. I mean, they're 6-2 up in this one, so they should be fine. Unless, Lars, you think otherwise, unless you think Roma can do something miraculous.
No, I don't. No. I really don't. Sorry.
But
no.
Look, their fixture list, they've got to play tonight, then Sunday, Villa, Tuesday, Leicester, Thursday, Liverpool, Tuesday, Fulham. It's ridiculous. Or do we just say, listen, it's just this kind of year, and you just have to accept that.
I think both of those statements can be true. I think it is ridiculous that we have to do it this way, but I do think that's where we are this season. And, you know, at least the football is happening.
Villarreal, Arsenal. So Villarreal 2-1 up going into this game. And this is Arsenal's entire season, Jonathan, isn't it?
Pretty much it is indeed. And if they manage to get past, you know, Emery, then they potentially do have Manchester United in the final. So, yeah, so it's an eventful time. Save them in the battle for sort of 10th or whatever it is at the moment in the league. So definitely a huge game for Arsenal, really. And Arsenal are quite good in these sort of games where nobody expects them to do well. So I don't know. I've got a sort of sneaky feeling they might do it all right, but could be drastically wrong. But yeah, I think people kind of expect them to, you know, go out at certain points in this competition and they sort of pull results out of the bag, don't they? So it's going to be a good game, I think.
Paul says, would Man City Chelsea Champions League final, Arsenal Man United UEFA Cup final, Europa League final be a good thing, Barry?
It's not ideal, isn't it? I'd rather see teams from different countries play each other in the final, but I don't have any particularly strong feelings about it. People are already clamouring to have the Champions League final move from Istanbul to closer to home, ideally Wembley, which I suspect may not be available because the playoff finals are the same weekend, are they, as the European Cup finals. But I presume UEFA won't move it. They probably should, just in the interests of COVID and carbon footprint and all that. But that's another thing I don't have particularly strong feelings on.
I'm just on Google Maps to find out what stadium would be equidistant between
Birmingham.
Way the Eddie. Etihad and Stamford Bridge.
Well, so equidistant is slightly south of Birmingham, I think. So right. It could be like Solihull Moors or something.
Maybe the Rico could be.
Yeah. I a serious suggestion. I think Villa Park would be a great place for European Cup final. And so we don't like. So and then Turkey can have it next year. You just push it all 1 year ahead with the plans. Next year, hopefully there'd be fans in and all. God knows my sort of radar for sort of little Englandism is sensitive, oversensitive, some might say. But I don't think it's silly to move this to England at all with the circumstances being what they are. And if that's rough on the organisers in Istanbul, then yeah, let them have next season.
Reports of 8,000 fans going as well, which seems slightly bonkers given the current situation. Premier League then, Man City Chelsea this weekend. We've talked about that one. Leeds versus Spurs. Simon says, do any of you have any suggestions for a new Spurs manager, seeing as Levy has no idea? Lars, I saw Gasperini being mentioned the other day.
Yeah. I wonder, Gasperini at his stage of his career, moving abroad for the first time. I mean, might be interesting. I think if I owned Tottenham, if I was Joe Lewis and I was in charge of this stuff, I would tell Ralf Rangnick to fix my football club. And I'm not sure Dan Levy would want that, because Ralf Rangnick is the kind of guy who wants to be in control of a lot of things at the club, and he would want to change the way a lot of things are done. But I think that would be a good thing for Spurs. Just go to Ralf Rangnick and say you can have the keys to the car and just drive it for a couple of years, and we'll give you as much money to spend as we can.
For listeners who aren't totally aware of Ralf Rangnick and everything he's done, can you give us a sort of posse?
So he's kind of you can call himself the godfather of sort of modern German football, basically, as a guy who's influenced a lot of coaches. His work, I mean, he sort of built up Hoffenheim from basically nothing, before having a hugely important role building up the whole Red Bull empire. Thomas Tuchel is one manager he's influenced. This whole sort of high press, sort of direct tempo, sort of what we associate with sort of modern German pressing style of football, is very much influenced by him and his idea of how football should be played. And he almost went to Milan, which I think would have been an odd one, because obviously they have a bunch of different directors who are in charge of various things, and I don't think that would have, I mean, I think that could have gone very wrong. But he's never really, I mean, he was at Schalke for a while, took them to a semi-final in the Champions League. He's never really had time and space to try to do his thing at a reasonably big club. Instead, he's worked in these sort of almost, sealed off little projects like Hoffenheim and the RB Leipzig and thing, where he's been allowed to build everything in his image. So putting him in a club like Tottenham, where there's a little bit more pressure perhaps and more people who have strong opinions about everything, could be a bit of a risk. It would be very interesting to see, I think.
Elsewhere, West Ham Everton. Is this the final of the Everton Cup? If West Ham win, then they really have no chance of winning the Everton Cup. So they need to look out for that. And it'd be really interesting to see, you know, and we talked about it a bit briefly last pod, West Ham, and their run is pretty good. And I know they're not, I know they've got a small squad and they're struggling with injuries a little bit, but Antonio's back. And, you know, Everton will be Everton, won't they? Which probably means they'll win this game 3-0. West Brom and Fulham can both be relegated this weekend. In the WSL, Baz, you did the minute-by-minute of Spurs-Chelsea. How was it? How? I mean, Chelsea are so much better, aren't they, than Tottenham? That I imagine it was quite a stroll?
It was. They should have won by a lot more than 2-0. And I suppose the worry for Emma Hayes going into the game was there'd be a bit of a hangover from the Champions League semi-final, going back to the bread and butter of the Super League. But they won quite comfortably. Sam Kerr got 2 goals, which brings her tally to 20 for the season, which is 3 more than the entire Tottenham squad have scored between them, which sort of tells you all you need to know, I suppose. But the result means that Chelsea go 2 points clear of Manchester City with just one round of fixtures to play. So if they win their game on Sunday against Reading at home, which they should, with a minimum of fuss, you'd think they will be crowned back-to-back champions and then have the Champions League final to look forward to.
Yeah, the Champions League is it's also going to be free to air. So it's on BT Sport, but they're making it available to anyone to watch via a range of platforms. So that's a good thing. I can't remember if I said this on the last pod about Emma Hayes. I interviewed her on Monday afternoon, probably not. And I said, you know, what will you do if you win the quadruple? And she said, I'll reverse over my phone and you'll find me on a park bench with Estella. I thought it was an absolutely brilliant line. And she's an absolutely brilliant manager. In the Football League, abject terror time for me. In the Championship, Wickham are basically down, barring scoring a million. And then two of Sheffield Wednesday, Rotherham and Derby, will go with them. Wednesday play Derby needing a win and hope that Rotherham don't win at Cardiff. If Rotherham do win, a draw is not enough for Derby. One thing left to be settled in League One, the final playoff place. Charlton's 3-0 win over Lincoln on Tuesday means there's just 1 point separating 6th, 7th and 8th going into the final round of fixtures on Sunday. And in League Two, two of Cambridge, Bolton and Morecambe will go up. One of them will drop into the playoffs. Three of Newport, Tranmere, Forest Green, Exeter and Salford will join them. I don't want to talk about it. Basically, I can't. It's just... Oh. Just a point. Grimsby have got new owners as well. They're on a high. I know they've been relegated. I know they're bottom of the league, but... I don't think you're very. I don't think you're very kind, Barry. I don't think you're a kind man.
No, I would love to see Cambridge go up, but I would also love to not see them go up. The only thing is, we're not on the radio on Sunday morning, so that you would have either been, you know, as high as a kite or as low as I've ever seen you. So I don't think you'd be fit for purpose if they managed to not get relegated. Not get
promoted. I mean, I'd be disappointed if we went down at this stage of the season. Right, that'll do for part two. We'll start with the latest in non-league in part three. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Jonathan, you spend a lot of time following the non-league. I mean, we've just talked about the League Two and the Championship. It's so tight at the top of the conference, isn't it, of the National League?
Yeah, very tight. I think it's 6 points separating the top four, and there's games at hand. There's all kinds of permutations. I think from anywhere down to about 11th, roughly, you could still maybe make the playoffs. Torquay are top of the league. Sutton have had a big lead, but have kind of given it away with some recent results. They lost to Notts County in the week, 3-2. Notts County went down to 10 men and then won the game in the last minute with a penalty. So from Sutton's point of view, it was a big disappointment. And they've had some disappointments in the past. I think they were about 6-7 points clear at one point. And now they're 4 points behind. They've got a game in hand, but still for that automatic promotion spot, it's starting to look a little bit more in Torquay's favour. But there's some really big clubs in that hunt for the playoffs. And it's quite an exciting end to the season, despite the general pandemonium of the National League this season with all the cancellations and the furloughs and everything else. So it's finally getting some sort of normality in terms of the results and excitement.
It is weird, isn't it? Because Dover obviously just said we can't afford to carry on, so they stopped. And then a lot of teams, there's no relegation, right? So then some teams have just playing the kids. I think Wealdstone, if you look at the league table, you know, there are just a lot of L's near the bottom. Like some teams have just sort of, I wouldn't say given up, but like it's weird. And then I heard one story that maybe it's Chesterfield kind of furloughed their players and then left those players on furlough and got in some better players to play for them.
Yeah, it's been sort of quite controversial, to be honest. Chesterfield, Stockport as well have spent quite a bit of money just buying players. And so I guess you can sort of ethically question the idea of furloughing your squad to then go and sign sort of other players from different, you know, divisions, like higher in the Football League for five-figure sums and things like that. It kind of brings the whole government support scheme thing into question, really, doesn't it? And there's been other clubs have kind of, or at least other clubs' fans have been pointing that out quite a lot, particularly with Stockport and Chesterfield, I think, in particular. So yeah, it's added to it. And as you've said, there's teams at the bottom who can't go down. So, you know, Barnet, for example, I think Weymouth, Wellstone as well, furloughed their squads, and they've just kind of been taking 4-5-0 defeats in recent games and playing sort of young players and things like that. So yeah, the integrity of the competition hasn't been ideal, I don't think, this season, really, to be honest. But that's, you know, partly because of COVID and then partly because of the, you know, the way the National League has been kind of maybe handled this season as well. So yeah, it is what it is, I suppose.
And what's, you know, for a lot of players, it's a very, this must be a very difficult time, right? I mean, and are the clubs in a situation where most of them will be fine? You know, I remember saying a million times when this lockdown started, you know, the first one, we just want football to look vaguely like it looks now, even if that isn't perfect. Like, how many of these non-league clubs do you think will go under?
I think we could see quite a few go under. I mean, it's a difficult one because I think there is the support there. There has been things like the National Lottery grants, for example, that has given funding to clubs at that level. But of course, I think the problem has been really the National League management has been questionable, I suppose, without wanting to be too critical. That for example, the lottery funding was given to a lot of clubs in the National League South, and so they played sort of half a season and then stopped because they kind of couldn't really afford it and that kind of thing. So, you know, there's been sort of decisions made where could they have maybe just not played that season instead of playing sort of, you know, 15, 20 games and then cancelling the season. So the funding has been an issue. I think clubs generally probably will survive. There's been obviously streaming and things like that to help the clubs. And like I say, there's certain support schemes to hopefully keep them in business. But there's certain clubs that will be definitely struggling a lot. But then, like you say, there's people, other clubs buying players for quite decent money and things like that. So yeah, it's a bit of a mishmash. But all in all, I think some, you know, it's a bit like everyone in the Football League, really, isn't it? I mean, even Championship clubs at this moment in time, there's certain Championship clubs who might not survive. So yeah, it runs through the whole pyramid, really. And I think that's part of the reason the Super League people found that a little bit distasteful just further down the pyramid, because they're obviously struggling for survival and they're worried about that trickle down.
I like the idea of, you know, Roy Hodgson furloughing Christian Benteke and then just buying another centre forward and just saying, nothing to see here. He's on furlough. Fit bar, Barry. Look at you. Oh, no, there's a surprised face. No, just one question. It's a yes, no answer. Okay, you ready?
Yep.
Stuart says, does Barry think Brecon City will win the relegation playoff in League Two, likely to be playing Kelty Hearts, who will be strong favourites after they beat Brora 2-0 on Tuesday?
Yes.
In the A-League, Perth Glory owner Tony Sage was denied entry into the game last night because he wasn't seen as necessary to be at the game. So he signed up to be a ball boy so he could watch the game. They lost 3-1, but at least he got to see his team. Dan says, after Barry declared himself not young but relevant on yesterday's pod, at what age will he deem himself to be irrelevant?
I'd imagine once I turn 60, so I've got a good 12 years left of relevance.
Oh, we 12 years of Baz's relevance. Will that date be followed by a pod special, like when he reached the peak age of misery last year? Maybe it will. I mean, who knows? Will we all be here in 12 years is a very good question. Barry's mailbag on the email, footballweekly@theguardian.com. This is from Matt in Big Sky, Montana, United States. Max, listening to the pod from today, I think the efforts might be better spent on Barry's dating life. With his background in agriculture and animals, I would suggest he checks out farmersonly.com.
Yes.
I'm not sure if you have that service in the UK, but their catchy jingle is hard to ignore. And then he says he likes the pod. Would you be interested in signing up for... Because a lot of people... signed you up for Match.com, but you haven't taken you haven't taken anyone up on that, even though you had 24 matches in the last week. FarmersOnly.com?
If some lady who has got a nice big farmhouse and lots of land was interested, I wouldn't dismiss the notion out of hand.
Oh, marvellous. Off the back of Alan crashing the car and writing it off, miraculously surviving and the pod staying on through the smoking sort of entrails of his vehicle. Rufus Biscuit says, legally speaking, the proximate cause of the collision was Rushton moaning about Cambridge United. Alex should subrogate against Rushton, who in turn should subrogate against Cambridge United for damages caused by the collision. So I now have to sue my football club. And then Alex got in touch to say, I too have had a car crash while listening to Football Weekly. My little ego was written off, but the audio kept playing through the stereo aux in cable. Can there be more of us? Well, I don't know. It's nice to know that we carry on playing, but perhaps we are the problem.
I think people should just drive a little more carefully.
Yeah, or just stop listening to us because we're a hazard, aren't we?
Hopefully not an Eden hazard.
Yeah, very good. Marvellous. If one of us...
You're in better shape, Max.
Absolutely, if one of us is going to do that joke, I would have suspected Lars. So many congratulations.
Hey!
Well, I was quite taken with the news that Gary Neville has set up a pundit supergroup on WhatsApp to save football from itself. So it's like him and Jamie and Jake Humphrey and various other luminaries from the world of
Lineker,
punditry.
Rio Ferdinand, Steve McManaman.
Fletch, presumably, and Sav. Mm. And then, of course, some of the pundits have set up a splinter WhatsApp group so they can talk about one of their number behind his back. And we all know who that'll be.
Are we not just jealous that we're not in the WhatsApp
group? Oh, of course, yeah. I really want to be in the WhatsApp group. And then one of them will be sending around his little motivational pep talks, which I'm sure will go down well with the rest of them. I really want to be on the WhatsApp group.
I don't think you do you? I'll find out. I'll see it. I'll direct message Gary and see if he'll add you. I'll say, look, can you add Barry to the group? Here's his number, and see what happens. Happy?
Okay, yeah, thank you.
Do you think Gary Neville will send a message going, right, I've set up this group because I want to stop evil people running football, and then McManaman will come in and say, what he said there is, and he'll just repeat exactly what Gary Neville... We're not going to get hired by anyone after this short conversation, Barry. Oh,
I think that ship sailed a long time ago.
Probably right. Hey, listen, 12 years of still being relevant. Thanks so much, everybody, for coming on the podcast. I enjoyed it tremendously. Thank you, Lars.
Thank you, Max.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you, Max.
Thank you, Barry.
Thanks, Max.
We'll be back on Monday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.